Welcome to The Extra, the show that connects you with the issues, topics, and people that are important to you. Maybe not even people, maybe some of nature's creatures. Because every year, the monarch butterflies complete a multi-generational, multinational migration. And here in southern Colorado, we are treated sometimes to scenes of that migration, seeing those swarms of beautiful monarch butterflies, their orange and black colors so brilliant against the blue of our Colorado skies. Well, in 2017, for the first time, cyclist, biologist, outdoor educator, and adventurer Sarah Dykeman accompanied the millions of monarchs to celebrate their journey and kind of act as their voice to learn what they encounter. So as part of her process, she has translated that entire experience into a book and into a program she presents it. So joining us to talk more about this journey, Sarah Dykeman, welcome to the show.
Hello, thanks for inviting me on.
Oh, Sarah, what was your inspiration to do this?
My inspiration was the monarch, and I recognized two things. One, I recognized that the monarch goes through some interesting country and follows lots of different routes and goes to many different neighborhoods and all sorts of different people. So I knew that by following the monarch, I could connect to a really diverse range of people. And I knew also that it was important to do a trip like this because the monarch population is in serious decline. And I thought, well, what better than to have an adventure and at the same time use my time and my voice and my energy to be a spotlight for the butterfly and what we can all do to help.
Right. And we're going to get to that, the challenges that the monarch butterfly is facing. But let's tell our listeners, I mean, this was a 10,201-mile journey, and you did this by bike. Why was it important to, I guess, ride alongside the monarchs? I mean, what did you feel like you gained by doing that as opposed to maybe just coming down in a few of the spots where you knew the monarchs would land?
Well, I love bike touring, and something I've learned from bike touring is that it's all the in-between parts that are the most exciting. So, yes, you're going to go from these interesting sites that lots of tourists go to, and yes, you could, like, go to specific spots where there's always monarchs, but it's all the space in between that's where the real adventure lies. And so I knew I wanted to ride my bike, and it just happened that the monarch is kind of the perfect creature to follow by bicycle. Their migration progresses about 25 to 30 miles a day, and I would cover that in about 60 miles a day just because my route was I can't fly like a butterfly. I have to follow roads. And then the other great thing, as I mentioned earlier, is that they spread out. So by the time I got to Texas, as long as I was on the road in Texas in the spring, I was on the route of the migration. So yeah, the monarch just became a great guide to kind of lead me.
And I don't know anything about monarchs. Do they fly continuously? Do they land to gather food and then continue on their journey? Or do they, sleep at night or calm down at night?
They do sleep at night or anytime it's bad weather or especially cold and rainy. And one of the things I actually love biking at night. I have pretty strong rear and front lights on my bike. So I could turn on my lights and I'd always bike by the trees and think, ha ha ha, I'm gaining ground, because it turns out I'm actually slower than a butterfly. But then I always follow that up with, but luckily I'm faster than a caterpillar.
True. Yeah. I didn't know you're slower than a butterfly. They can actually outpace you when it comes to covering distance.
Yeah. Well, one of the interesting things about monarchs is depending on the time of year, will determine where they're flying. And if there's a really nice headwind, 500, 600 feet up in the air, headwind to tailwind, then they can go very high into the sky, and then they can catch these winds. And so they can go fast thanks to the wind. And I was a little bit more at mercy of the roads and my own cumbersome setup.
Did you always know you were going to transform this experience into a book, or did the inspiration come to you slowly in the many, many moments, I'm sure, that you had to contemplate what you were doing?
Yeah, I had a lot of time to think, and this is not my first big adventure, but it was the first one where I realized I had more to say, and that there was an audience and a need to say what I was thinking about on my bike. And so about halfway through my trip, I kind of was like, yeah, this is it. There's so many people that want to know more about monarchs. There's so much to say. There's so many incredible bits of science to teach people about. And the message is one that I think resonates with so many people, especially because the monarch can visit anyone, and everyone that lives on their route can be part of the solution.
Interesting. When you first told this plan and presented it to, say, your loved ones, your parents, I'm thinking, a parental response might be. What was their? Did they welcome it? Were they thinking that maybe you might make it, 100 miles or 200 miles, but not the full 10,000 miles?
At this point, my parents know that I can do stuff like this. My last big adventure, I canoed the Missouri River from source to sea. And so I think they were happy that I was just passing through their neck of the woods on my bicycle, and that luckily they also knew that I was getting taken care of by so many people that also take care of the monarchs. So
okay.
They were rooting for me.
What a great example of setting a goal, reaching it, not just once, multiple times, and certainly any parent has to be proud of that. When we come back, we're going to be continuing the conversation with author Sarah Dykman. Sarah's book is titled Bicycling with Butterflies, My 10,201-Mile Journey Following the Monarch Migration. We'll be talking more about this special creature and why its health reflects the health of our Earth. That's coming up here on The Extra. We're back with today's guest, Sarah Dykman. We are talking about the monarch butterflies, the butterflies who were her traveling companions as she bicycled 10,201 miles. And I'm guessing that's a round trip, or did you just do it in one direction and then take a plane back, Sarah?
It was round trip. So I started in Michoacan, Mexico, where the monarchs overwinter. I made it to Canada, and then I headed back.
Okay. And when they overwinter in Michoacan, Mexico, I think I've seen pictures of the area around there. It's just swarming with monarchs, correct?
Right. And if you think about it, if you look at a range map of the monarch butterfly, during the spring and summer, the monarchs spread out from, the eastern population of monarchs spreads out from the Rocky Mountains to the Atlantic Ocean. But then in the winter, they all crowd together in this area that is about as the size of my hometown in Kansas City. So it's a concentration of monarchs, and I love visiting them there. When they're hanging from the branches, they'll actually, their weight will bend the branches.
Oh my.
And sometimes, even though it takes four monarchs to equal the weight of a dime, sometimes enough monarchs will crowd on the branches that they'll even break. And then the best part is when they start to fly around, when it gets warm, you can actually close your eyes and hear the hum of all of their wings.
Oh.
And one of the lessons that the monarch taught me is that it's such a beautiful metaphor for the efforts and the conservation efforts happening. One butterfly alone would hardly move a needle of a pine tree, but millions together break branches. And I think the same goes for all of us fighting for the monarch. One garden is just a garden. But millions together, well, that equals solutions. And so I just love being part of this team, and I love getting more people involved.
And explain to us, I guess, what benefits the monarch brings to the world other than the beauty, because a lot of people know about honeybees. They help to pollinate plants, and without honeybees, we'd be really hurting as far as having food sources. But the monarchs also have an important part to play in our circle of life here on Earth. Tell us about that.
Yes, of course. Every creature on the planet has a role to play. And I think some are more obvious than others. With as far as the monarch goes, I think they have two really critical roles. And one is that they're indicator species. And so their populations are telling us what is the health of the planet. And right now, the monarch population is in decline. And that's a result of habitat loss, of the use of chemicals, and of climate change. And so the monarchs are warning us every single year, hey, something is wrong, something's amiss, and we need to be listening to these creatures. And the other, I think, really important thing the monarchs do is they're kind of ambassadors for nature. I call them gateway bugs. They invite people in. So no one can deny the beauty of a bright, orange, beautiful butterfly. But as the more you get to know the adult monarchs, you want to start looking for the caterpillars. And then that's, they kind of invite you in to crawl on your hands and knees through the wild ditches. And then you start noticing the tussock moth caterpillars that also eat the milkweed, and the hummingbird moths, and the snakes, and the lizards, and the googly-eyed spiders. And I think the monarch is such an important guide to bring us back to nature.
Interesting. And are monarchs always orange and black? I thought I saw one last summer that was yellow and black. Do they come in different colors?
They're pretty consistently colored. What you might notice, especially with the spring migrants, and I notice this a lot in Texas, is that by the time the overwintering generation arrives to the breeding grounds, they are really, really faded and tattered, and they almost look like another species. And that's because a lot of the monarchs that are born in the U.S. and Canada, they live as an adult for about 2 to 6 weeks. But the overwintering generation lives around 8 months. So they've been through the ringer by the time they're breeding.
I see. Yeah, quite a bit. You know, 16 times older. Yeah, I would say so. When you're talking about these monarchs and what they're seeking out and what we can do to provide better habitat, actually, I'm going to take a short break here. Sarah Dykeman, the author of Bicycling with Butterflies, her journey following the monarch migration. When we come back, we'll ask what we can do to improve the habitat that we're offering to the monarchs, to invite them to maybe make a pit stop in our area, in our neighborhood, outside our home. That's coming up on The Extra. I'm back with Sarah Dykeman, who is the author of Bicycling with Butterflies, a young woman who took on a 10,201 mile round trip journey to accompany monarch butterflies on their migration. And Sarah, I was asking right before the break what we can all do to encourage the butterflies to make a pit stop in our area. And I had told you before we even started this recording that outside the KRDO News Radio studios, there's this big plant. I don't even know what it is, but it gets covered with some sort of small bud of flower at some point. And not last year, but the year before, we're talking swarms of monarchs were just hanging out at that bush that covered, you know, kind of the size of a parking lot pretty much. And it was just an amazing, stupendous sight. So what can we be planting and keeping in our yards so that we are encouraging monarchs to have something that I'm guessing that was a food source, correct?
Exactly. The adult monarchs need nectar. They drink nectar, and that's any flowering plants. And the best ones for monarchs are the native plants. Those are the best for all the pollinators. And then the extra special plant for monarchs is the milkweed. And milkweed is a type of plant that is the only food source of the monarch caterpillar. And it actually plays a really pivotal role because as the caterpillars eat milkweed, they can sequester or store the toxins from the milkweed in their bodies. And that's actually what renders monarch adults toxic and safe from most predation. And I love hearing you talk about that bush full of monarchs, because it just reminds me how we will plant these gardens and the monarchs will thank us by having these beautiful shows of flowers. And it's a real gift to give the monarchs flowers, and they reciprocate in kind by gifting us their visits.
Interesting. And do they procreate anywhere along their journey, or is there only a specific place where they lay eggs, right, that turn into caterpillars?
Exactly. And each female monarch can lay around about 500 eggs. And she'll actually only want to lay one egg per milkweed, ideally, because caterpillars are eating machines. That's all they do. And if she laid 500 on one milkweed, well, they would starve within the hour. So she lays one per egg, and it takes a few weeks to metamorphose into a chrysalis, and then that becomes a butterfly. And then those butterflies that are born that are not the fall migrants, they become sexually mature at about 2 or 3 days, depending on the weather and whatnot. And then they'll start laying eggs, and often they'll be moving north and laying eggs as they go for the rest of the female's life.
And do the monarchs have some sort of honing mechanism, like, you know, salmon go back to their place where they respond? Is that something that works with the monarchs, or do they just kind of go with the crowd?
I think the jury's still out on all that exact bits of science, but what is definitely clear is that in the fall, the monarchs that are born, they all, without ever having been to Mexico, will fly back to pretty much the exact same trees as their great-great-grandparents. And there's some really interesting science coming in on how they do that.
Interesting.
But for me, it's enough to just look at an egg on the side of the road in New York and think, this egg will develop into a monarch butterfly and fly to Mexico. Like, that's astounding.
They all do. How fascinating. I bet when you've been going along, there have been a lot of people that have been curious about the knowledge that you're able to share and impart about monarchs with them. Who's been the most fascinated, would you say?
Well, the great thing about being on a bicycle is you're a conversation starter. So I've had thousands of conversations. and in fact, along my route, I presented to over 9,000 people in formal presentations as well. So I consider myself a voice for the monarch. That's my goal. And it's amazing the reception that I get. I've just been delighted with how excited everyone is about monarchs. And it's from farmers to teachers to kids. It's everyone sees the excitement and the adventure that's in the monarch.
Right. And I've had a friend, a late friend, unfortunately, she's no longer with us, who is an entomologist. She preferred mosquitoes. I don't know why, because mosquitoes are pesky creatures, and they love me. They love giving me bites. But I can see where the fascination with monarchs would start. Were you always a bug person, or did it just kind of come on late?
Well, I've always loved animals. In fact, I've studied wildlife biology in college. But I've always been most drawn to the animals that are sort of like the, kind of like your friend, the ones that they're the underdogs, the ones that people are less excited about. So usually it's the creepy crawly animals. And I love the monarchs, like I said, because their caterpillars are a little, like, for a lot of people that might be like, ugh. But once you get to know them, they help you see the beauty in every creature. And I think that they help see the breed, the beauty in kind of my favorite animals, which are actually frogs.
So you're monarchs, monarchs, frogs, that's kind of your area?
Yeah, and the great thing is when you help a monarch, you help a frog. And when you help a frog, you help a monarch. Everyone is connected, all of us. And when we provide habitat, we provide the earth with what the earth needs to help so many creatures. So it's win, 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 win.
Sustained all the way around. When we come back, we're going to talk more with Sarah Dykeman, who's the author of Bicycling with Butterflies, her 10,201-mile journey following along with this butterfly migration that has its roots in Mexico, in a specific area of Mexico. That conversation continuing with Sarah when we come back. We're back with Sarah Dykeman, who is an author and a cyclist who has accomplished an amazing thing. She went on a 10,000-plus mile bike ride. Yeah, just thinking about that is pretty intense. But then she didn't take any rest in between because she was keeping up with the monarch butterflies. She was accompanying them on their migration, starting in Mexico, heading north and then heading back again. And Sarah, you did this all as someone who was looking to, I guess, set a goal and follow through with it. But when you were going through, did you ever worry about danger you were going to encounter on the roads?
I made sure to be aware of my surroundings and where I was. I feel like I can read people pretty good, and you could get a pretty good sense of how people are. And one of my rules with bike touring is always say yes as long as you feel safe. So I would often meet people at grocery stores, and we'd start chatting, and then they'd say, hey, do you want to come to my house for dinner or to to have a shower and spend the night. And if I felt safe, I would say yes. And what I know is that most people are good and most people want to help. And so I just kind of have to trust in that.
Right. And I bet they got on the Monarch Butterfly bandwagon after talking to you.
Well, that's my goal. And you know, sometimes I think, well, I think there's something out there that's like, you have to hear everything 7 times. So I think, well, if I can be one of those voices in their ear, reminding them to plant natives, share their lawn space with milkweed, and maybe then they'll tell their neighbors about it. Like, that's how the message spreads. And it might not change them immediately, but I think it's one step in the right direction.
Did you encounter people who were not convinced that the monarchs were in trouble? And how did you change their minds or try to?
So, of course, not everyone is as passionate as I am about monarchs. And I did pass lots and lots of houses with perfectly green grass lawns. And I think that it's not so much that they disagree with my message. It's just that people need to know what they can do to help. And I don't think a lot of people know. And so I tried to give people the benefit of the doubt and just try and remind them and make conservation fun and really actually just try and lift up the people that were already being great examples. The folks that I met that already had lawns full of natives, they were my medicine. The school kids growing milkweed at their school, they were medicine that I would try and hold on to and lift up so that people could follow in their lead.
And we should mention, Colorado is kind of a tricky spot to grow anything. We have very unique extremes of temperature and of moisture. Is Colorado somewhere where you can grow milkweed? I mean, is milkweed something that can be grown in any environment?
Yeah, there's a lot of species of milkweed. So I would encourage folks to talk to their local nurseries or their native plant societies. And then I would just do a little experimenting, and the plants will tell you where they want to grow and who wants to grow there. And I actually planted some milkweed at my parents' house, and the first batch died. And rather than giving up, I just said, okay, they gave me an important message that they want something different. And you keep trying, and you'll land on something.
So that kind of, I think, is a testament to your character, perseverance there. Earlier in our conversation, if you're just joining now, Sarah was sharing with us how this is not her first major goal that she set out for herself that involved a long journey. She actually canoed the Missouri River from the source to the sea. Is that what you said?
Yep.
Oh, wow.
Well, not the exact source of the Missouri River. If anyone's listening, I started at a mountaintop in Glacier National Park and walked to a creek. And when I was able to get to a river, that's when I was able to put a canoe in, that's where I started.
That's where he's. Okay. Well, we won't quibble over that small discrepancy.
Just in case someone's listening, but
that knows that it's not exactly a river from the very source. But being an author is a totally different thing. When it came to putting down your experiences onto words, was that a tough thing, or did you just translate maybe journals that you kept along the way into the written word, or how did you conduct that process? Because not everyone's born an author.
No, it was a long process, and I honestly believe that the monarchs were my teachers in all of this, kind of helping guide the process. I started, and usually when people write a sort of memoir, travel log, they want to have a little bit of time to give perspective, and I knew the monarchs didn't have time. So my strategy instead was, rather than figure out exactly how I changed at the moment, I sort of, as I was writing, I gave myself the permission to write about every experience that I had, because I did write in a journal every night and I took lots of photos. And then my first draft was twice as long as my original. And so in the process of writing, I was able to kind of see these themes coming through, and then was able to edit it down to something that was a little more manageable.
Oh. And
but it was a process, and it continues.
And it continues. But at the end, you probably came to some conclusions through writing about this. What would your conclusions be, in your book, or just in at the end of your journey?
Yeah, I think now that I can say that I was more angry and frustrated than I realized, just about the plight of the world. But at the same time, I realized that the only way I could get through the miles and get through each day was to know that I was trying, that I was doing my best. And I think that the only medicine to the despair that a lot of us feel when it comes to the climate and the future is to try. And while I was biking, I so often would encounter older people that would look at me and they'd say, "When I was a kid, I used to see lots of monarchs, and now we don't see any." And that got so old, and I just vowed. I was like, I want, when I talk to the future generation, to tell them about monarchs. Hopefully they're still there to talk about, and then tell them about all the things I did to try to leave them a planet that's healthy.
Right.
And trying is all we can do.
And encouraging others to do the same. One voice can reach many through either the written word or through broadcasts like this. We want to thank you, Sarah Dykeman, for joining us, author, adventuress, cyclist, and monarch aficionado. She appreciates and preserves the monarch butterflies. Sarah, your book is Bicycling with Butterflies, My 10,201-Mile Journey Following the Monarch Migration. It's available anywhere books are sold, right?
Yep. Yep, and I appreciate you letting me help make my voice louder on behalf of the monarchs.
Great. And you have some virtual book signings that are coming people's way. How can people find out about them?
You can visit my website at beyondabook.org, and there's more photos, stories, and a calendar of events for coming up.
Okay. Well, Sarah Dykeman, congratulations on reaching your goal of accompanying the monarch butterflies on their migration, of writing this book, and of getting the word out to all of us who hear your voice and hear your story, and maybe we'll look at those butterflies in a whole new light. I know I sure will. So thank you.
Thank you.
You've been listening to The Extra on KRDO News Radio.